Welcome back to The Wall Podcast with me, your host, Stephanie O'Quigley. This episode is a conversation with my own mom, a psychotherapist specializing in anxiety. For anyone who doesn't know, psychotherapy is the use of psychological methods, particularly when based on regular personal interaction, to help a person change behavior and overcome problems in desired ways. Psychotherapy refers to a range of treatments that can help with mental health problems, emotional changes, and some psychiatric disorders. It really helps to enable patients or clients to understand their feelings and what makes them feel positive, anxious, or depressed. If you follow me on Instagram, you might have seen my mom make her special appearance on my Instagram stories where we answered your questions. We did a quick Q&A while she was here in New York in May. And that went down so well with you guys, and I got such a good reaction that I really wanted to get her on here for a full podcast episode. We focused on the topic of self-awareness, I suppose, just because it has had such an impact on me and my life, and it's always something she's taught me from a very, very young age, and something that we talk about a lot in our conversations. So this episode is really to bring that kind of idea of self-awareness, what it means to be self-aware from her perspective as a psychotherapist. At the end of the episode, we also got to answer more of your questions that you sent in on Instagram, so thanks so much. The topics were self-sabotage, anxiety, depression, somewhere around eating disorders, miscarriages, and all those sensitive topics. So she was able to answer your questions, and hopefully they don't just help the person who sent them in, but also anybody who's listening, since they are some common experiences. Enjoy this episode, and maybe when I go back to Ireland in December, I will do a second episode with my mom if this one goes down well. If you like it, if you're listening to it, please tag me on your Instagram stories. Let me know that you're listening to it, and I appreciate anybody who has done that so far. It really helps spread the word about the podcast and hopefully help more people than the audience so far. Enjoy, and I will talk to you on the next episode. So maybe if you start off with telling people who you are and what your degree is in and why you got drawn into the industry, because you only started when I was 18 to go back to studying, and before that, like, you wanted to raise kids, and I would have never have known that you were interested in psychotherapy growing up. So did you know that you were interested in psychotherapy growing up, or was it just something that kind of dawned on you and you kind of, like, through your own personal path?
No, I didn't know. I suppose I wasn't really 100% happy in myself.
Right.
And I suppose I knew there was more to find. I didn't know. I was searching and searching and searching. I was doing some counselling work with children in Bernardo's and in, you know, in actually support after homicide back then, and I kind of said, you know what, I like this work, why not go back to college and get a proper qualification to do it?
Yeah.
So I did a foundation course, and I loved every minute of it, and once I started to explore myself as a person, I just opened that door, and I've never looked back.
Yeah. For the people who maybe mightn't be so familiar with it, when you say you explored yourself as a person, when you go into training to be a psychotherapist or into the college education, are you constantly, do you have your own psychotherapist that you go to, or your own counselor, or are you constantly going to somebody as well? Like, how do you maintain that somebody going into a course, taking a course like that, isn't is kind of level-headed or is being monitored? Is that something they implement in college?
Well, I suppose on your journey, in your learning and experience, you find out yourself. But you, as part of the degree program, you have to do 50 hours of personal therapy.
Right.
So you would go to a therapist and you would explore any issues, concerns, you know, difficulties you were having in your own life, or any past trauma or anything like that would all be worked through.
Yeah.
And also the other side of that is to experience what it's like for a client.
Yeah.
So when a client comes
in, so you're playing the two roles.
You're playing the two roles, and I would say that to clients, you know, when I've sat in that chair that you're sitting in.
Yeah.
And I will again. You're never finished.
Yeah.
It's a lifelong process.
Yeah. You know? A lot of people don't realize that people who are psychotherapists or psychiatrists or whatever are actually do have their own problems, or they could have lost a child, or, you know, they could be dealing with ongoing anxiety, and they do themselves get therapy as well.
Absolutely.
And is it still required after you finish college to continue to get that therapy, or is that just up to your own discretion?
It's up to your own discretion. You have you know, an ethical duty to take care of yourself, because it's hard work. You have to do continuous professional development.
Yeah.
You have to do 30 hours as a therapist to keep up, you know, keep up your learning, your knowledge, your insights, and the whole lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, you do have to do that. That's part of your accreditation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, so somebody sent in a very interesting question: the difference between a counsellor, a psychotherapist, and a psychologist. So can you explain the difference between the three common misconceptions?
Yeah, well, I suppose a psychologist would learn all about, I suppose, the, you know, the developmental of stages of a person, from child to, you know, adulthood, and, you know, all about, I suppose, different
evolution.
It's more scientific.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more scientific. So where a counsellor I suppose the organisation that I'm accredited to would argue that being a counsellor and a psychotherapist are similar.
Okay.
So if I was to separate the two, I would say counselling would be perceived as a more supportive role with a client, and mm-hmm. then where the psychotherapy would go into more at a deeper level.
Okay.
Into the upbringing and you know, the background of past experiences and relationships and stuff like that.
Okay. And then the psychologist is deeper again.
The psychologist is, I suppose, more scientific. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good start. So I think that although there's so many different topics that we could talk about today, and we could sit here answering people's questions all day, I think when I started the podcast, one of the main reasons why I wanted to call it The Wall was because I think that you have to have so much self-awareness to get over the walls, or to get through the walls. And the more walls that you get over, the more self-awareness that you gather about yourself and things that you know, you never knew existed. And I think that comes with age and experience and everything else. But I think one of my main motivations for creating the podcast was really because I was so passionate about self-awareness and what that's done for me. So can you talk about, so for me, I'm still learning everything and still kind of trying to grasp it and kind of saying, you know, there's a few light bulb moments that I'm going, oh yeah, okay, all right, I get that, and everything else. But I think my motivation is that there's people out there that maybe suffer with anxiety, or they suffer with, you know, some of the questions that came up was imposter syndrome, and that these little things are creeping up in their day-to-day life because they're not self-aware, and they don't realize, you know, the things around them. They're not self-aware. And it has to be, you have to want to learn how to become more self-aware. But to be able to teach, you know, the path to that is really, really important. How do you remember your life when you were not self-aware at all? And with the what way you felt about yourself, or you felt about people, the way they treated you, how you felt, and in comparison to now, like how does that transition feel to somebody who I would consider, and you probably would say to yourself, that you've gathered a lot of self-awareness? How has that transition felt? And do you remember going back to the time where you specifically felt anxious, felt, because I know that you felt all those things, felt anxious, felt like you couldn't do something, you know, felt like people were walking all over you and things like that. A lot of people go through all that. So how does it feel like to go from one end of it to another?
It's been a long journey. It's been a long journey, and I'll continue to learn. I think we all will, you know. How do I feel differently? I suppose when I look back, I was probably enmeshed in other people's lives and mm-hmm. not really known who I was. Mm-hmm. And I suppose loving myself and valuing myself.
Yeah. And wait, so loving yourself and valuing yourself wasn't your priority?
No, it okay. wasn't. I was out to please other people.
Okay.
And I wanted people to think that I was fantastic.
Yeah.
And that I was a great person, that I would do anything for anybody. Still would do all those things now, but there is limits.
And you do them for different reasons.
I do them for different reasons. My agenda would be different. I would say, yeah, I'd help you out, or I will do this or do that, but it will be on my terms.
Yeah, yeah. And so what would be the examples that you would have fallen into, the kind of stuff that probably creeps up again in your memory, that you say, God, I would never let that happen to me again, or, you know, I've never felt like that again. I would never want to feel like that again. What are those examples that you have, has happened for you in the past, that you know that you've come a long way since that? You know, do you think that would be people, you know, using you, or just kind of keeping yourself as a low priority?
Yeah, people, I suppose, controlling me.
Yeah.
People making me do things I don't want to do.
Yeah.
That would be, I would see the red flags immediately for that now.
Yeah.
From the start.
Okay.
But it has taken me a long time to see that.
Yeah.
Taking care of myself. Valuing myself, you know. I think, you know, maybe I think some of the questions that are going to come up later about self-esteem, you know, what are you measuring yourself up against?
Yeah.
You know, like, what's the you know, where's the rating?
Yeah.
Who are you rating yourself against?
Yeah. Comparison.
Because if you're rating yourself against something, you're always going to lose.
Yeah, it's never apples to apples.
No.
Yeah, yeah. And where does that come from? Because some of the questions that came in touched on raising a child, you know, with, either with anxiety or just in today's world where comparison is just like, you know, currency, unfortunately. Where does that come from? Getting back to basics, getting away from social media, technology, all that. As a parent, where does it come from to help a child with valuing themselves from a very young age? Because to me, I suppose, without having children, it looks like there's a fine line between spoiling a child and making sure that they feel valued.
Yeah, I suppose it's about the standards that you're setting for them, and you know, what standards are you setting for them, and what expectations are you setting for them?
Yeah.
You know, are you expecting them to be high achievers, you know, to be the best, to be, you know, to win the game? People win, people lose.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, a child has to be able to deal with that.
Yeah. Okay.
And
So how do you feel
not,
about
it? And have it separate from themselves, not have it as a judgment of themselves.
Right. Okay, that's very important, really. That's like that they're not defined by their achievements or everything. They can get an achievement, but they are not their achievements.
Exactly, they are not their achievements.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk lately about, well, the stuff I've read about self-awareness, and I suppose millennial kids, which I'm a millennial kid, but in America more so, and millennial kids are kind of just being bashed and, you know, being kind of taken down. But they're being taken down by people who raise them. So people of your generation are saying, oh, millennial kids are lazy. They just want to work in Google, and they want to get, you know, sit on beanbags all day on their Mac computer, and they're spoiled and lazy. But your generation raised millennial kids, and they don't realize that is the reason. And a lot of millennial kids generation are known to have participation medals that they would have got praised for participating in something else. And I think it's very important that, you know, a child knows when it loses and when it wins. And to me, that is more, you know, helps them kind of deal with the losses and the gains throughout life, I suppose.
It's to kind of have a self-acceptance of yourself and not to kind of instill in your child, you know, that that's where they get their validation from.
Right.
That they're much more than that.
Yeah.
That's what they do. Yeah, they go out and they win the football match or they, whatever. But, you know, that's not who they are.
Yeah.
They're much more than that.
Yeah.
And that applies to us all.
Yeah. So it continues. It's a kind of a continuous... The validation that's separated from the achievements, the job, the car, the everything else is separated from the person, where the person gets its value.
Exactly.
Yeah. So where does the child get its value?
It's as simple as being loved, you know, it's as simple as I love you no matter what you do, no matter, you know, what you are.
Yeah.
You know, to feel that love and... That's enough. It's love.
Yeah.
It's to feel loved. Everybody, it's innate in us all to feel loved.
Yeah.
And to feel wanted and to feel accepted.
Yeah.
Warts and all.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And you had from what seems, obviously it's a different generation, a different era, but when you were growing up, it was all about love and it was all about acceptance and there was not really much room or money or a opportunity to kind of play much sports or do much things like that outside of the norm, going to school every day, mm-hmm. is what it seems. And growing up out of that, you know, still found yourself anxious and like kind of I don't think I would ever have said that you ever defined yourself by anything else but yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would agree with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how does it look like, how does the work that you've done on yourself look like from that transition? You know, you were saying, I'm not happy with not feeling good about myself, not putting myself first, constantly doing things that I don't really want to do, mm-hmm. kind of being swayed into a lifestyle of things that are not even really what I want to do or that I care about. So you obviously had a realization and started to think that there must be a different way than what you were already doing.
Yeah, I suppose you feel, and people, you know, would come to me and say, you know, they feel empty inside sometimes, mm. and they feel there's something missing. They don't feel like kind of complete. And I would often say, and because of my own personal journey,
yeah.
that it was, you know, it may be because, I mean, obviously, you know, each individual is different, because you're not living life true to yourself.
Yeah.
You're living somebody else's life.
Yeah.
You know, you're not living life the way it's meant to be for you.
Yeah.
So you're losing out.
Yeah.
So that's
There's
where
a
the
constant disconnect.
Is. There's a constant disconnect.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. That's a lot of the work that you help people find, that kind of reconnect with finding validation back within themselves.
Yes.
And yeah. and I suppose when you put it like that, it's pretty easy to identify if you've somebody sitting in the chair in front of you and mm. they're saying, I feel that, you know, disconnect, or I feel that emptiness. It's mm. probably always because they're finding validation outside of themselves.
Yeah.
And they probably have not known much better.
Mm. And they'll never be fulfilled.
Yeah.
Just like I wasn't.
Yeah.
You'll never be fulfilled. There always will be a huge void.
Yeah. Okay. You know? So can you talk a little bit about getting towards that fulfillment? If somebody's listening to this and they are maybe thinking, you know, God, like, you know, they are feeling that they are defined a little bit by other things or objects or materialistic mm. things or their job or even their family. Some people can be defined by their family and, you know, their family mightn't be living true to who they are, or they mightn't agree with their family, or, you know, they're doing jobs they don't want to do, or they're buying cars that they think that, you know, so-and-so up the road is going to like and things like that. I think that is so important and such the biggest first obvious step to be able to be taken away from all that and still be okay with yourself, you know?
Yeah, I suppose the question you need to ask yourself is, why am I living this life? Why am I doing these things? Why
yeah.
am I buying this? Why do I need to have this material stuff? What void is it filling in my life?
Yeah.
you know, it's to, you know, the whole thing about self-awareness is to be able to see yourself separate from, you know, other people.
Yeah.
You know, separate from, the, you know, what attachment are they putting to all these, you know, material things? You know, what attachment are they putting on even to, you know, experiences as well too?
Yeah.
It's to be able to see themselves in that, not, as I said earlier, enmeshed in it.
Yeah.
Because it's going to, they're never going to be fulfilled. It's never going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to be enough.
Yeah.
So for me, how I reached that point was to believe in a higher power.
Yeah. Now,
I'm not talking about God or religion or anything, just a higher power, just to believe there's something more than you.
Mm.
And whatever that is for people, whatever shape or form they're going to find that in.
Yeah.
And that gives you the your identity.
Yeah. How did you come to that point?
Looking at other people and kind of thinking, you know, I want what she has. I can't describe it. I can't put it into words. But I knew there was some feeling, an experience, a connection that other people that I was in company with, that I knew there was something more. And I went searching for it.
Yeah.
And I can't even describe it.
Yeah.
You know, people that have pursued that spiritual journey would probably know what I'm talking about. But
yeah,
it's just to believe in something more than yourself. That gives you the solidity and stability that you need.
Yeah.
Carry you through.
So for somebody who is on the other side of things and they're really feeling bogged down by, you know, life, I suppose, and having a bit of that empty feeling, I think that's just so common. You know,
yeah.
I think that's so common.
Yeah.
What's the basic, your basic go-tos for somebody like that? Do you kind of, like, where do you start, you know, with somebody who it just has that empty feeling?
Yeah, and you're right, it is very common. It is very common, and a lot of people, I suppose, won't admit to it, and I suppose, yeah, that's, I understand that. It's hard to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to say that I don't, you know, I feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's to start to kind of, you know, reflect on yourself, to look inwards and say, what does Margaret need? What does Stephanie need? How am I in this situation? Where, you know, where am I? What's my intention here in relationships, in conversations, in doing things for other people? What's my intention here? It's fulfilling yourself, you know, your own personality.
Yeah.
And emotions and feelings.
Yeah. And I, like Oprah said a quote, she has said a quote before, and it's always resonated with me, even though it's easier said than done. But she says the answer is always there if you listen, you know, hard enough.
Yeah.
And then you kind of turn back in and you kind of say, go back to basics and what it is that you really want or need, and to see if you're following on that path.
Yeah.
And to kind of, you know, for me, the way I define it is to be able to be stripped away of materialistic things and kind of, you know, be stripped away of a lot of things and to be just kind of still okay and still remain the same the way you are. And that's a very strong definition of how I say that I'm pretty much self-aware and know that, you know, external things are not validating me, or, you know, and they're nice and they kind of give you, you know, they're fun and they're playful and things like that. But as long as that you can have them taken away and say, I don't give a shit what anybody thinks, if they're there or they're not there, you know, and to be able to kind of work yourself up and to have enough self-worth to say that you feel valid without...
You're enough.
Yeah, that you're enough regardless, you know, you're enough regardless. And it's so easy to say, who cares what other people think, but it really is the truth. And I think that I personally, if I say that, I think I said that long enough, like, why do we care what other people think? What is that? what kind of use is that on us? It's not going to have any benefits. It's not going to have any impact on us at all. Why we care if we start thinking about what other people think? What validity does their opinions have on you, you know? And if you kind of break it down long enough and you realize that there is no validity, you know, and nobody's right or wrong, you know.
Well, not everybody's going to like you anyway, yeah. And not everybody's going to be happy with what you're doing. And you're why give people the power over you?
Yeah.
Why give people the power that they have this authority to decide whether you are good or bad or nice or not?
Yeah.
Why give people that power?
Yeah.
That's not their power.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Why give it to them?
I know. Yeah. Giving them the headspace to even think about them thinking about you, yeah. For example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're taking that power away from yourself.
Yeah. So what kind of benefits would you say there is to living with self-awareness for people who are on the other side of it? What kind of way do you feel about life with, you know, a lot of self-awareness? Because I know that anxiety, like things, when you don't have self-awareness or when you're completely, you know, unaware of yourself, I think anxiety creeps up a lot and manifests itself in so many different ways than you can imagine. You're saying, why do I have anxiety over, you know, X, Y, and Z or whatever? Or you feel imposter syndrome, or you start holding on to relationships that are bad for you, or, you know, you're seeking relationships constantly because you feel the need to validate from somebody else. And things like that.
You don't know who you are, you see.
Yeah.
You know, when you become self-aware, you know, and as I said, you don't just arrive at it and say, yeah. I'm self-aware, you know. And now I'm self-aware, I have my life sorted. It's not like that. It's a lifelong journey.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you know who you are or have an idea of who you are, then you know what's right for you.
Yeah.
And then when you feel, you know, good about yourself, and give yourself the validation you deserve, then you won't settle for, you know, less.
Yeah.
Because you'll know that this is the way things should be for me.
Yeah.
This is the way it should be.
Is there different levels of self-awareness as you continue to, you know?
No, but because we're growing and we're learning and we're experiencing and we're in relationships and life.
Yeah.
There's different ways we experience it. So there's not different levels of it. It's like it's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, we will all continue to become more self-aware,
yeah.
You know. And I suppose, you know, don't ask why anyway, that's for sure. That's going to put you in the rear view mirror. Like, I mean, you know, ask yourself what have I to learn here? You know, what have I experienced here? What can I do here? You know, if you ask why, then you're putting yourself right back into a hole.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you're not going to expand or learn.
Yeah. You talked about the kind of the desire to connect or to kind of find out more a little bit about the higher power.
Mm-hmm.
And that book, The Seed of the Soul.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the author.
Oh, Gary something, yeah.
Yeah. Zukav, is it?
Zukav, yeah.
Is a book, and I've just thrown it out there because I know that you'll agree that it's heavy reading to kind of to talk about that. But it's a book that's been around for a long time, and it's really a book about that. Your point is to be able to find the seed of your soul and kind of to be able to identify, you know, where you are in relation to your soul and that's, I suppose, that would be a little bit deeper than just general self-awareness, but for people who have a good grasp on things, it's good to talk about. It's and, you know, separating the personality from the person, and that you're not even defined by your personality, which is something that I felt for a long time, but I didn't know where it was coming from, you know.
What do you mean?
You know, like I felt for a long time that, you know, without reading the book, you know, or talking about it really openly, that I was like, I always felt that I wasn't my personality. I just didn't even feel that I'm my personality. I just felt I was completely like a flow. I was just a soul, really. That's the only way to describe it. That would just continue on. And that I'm just in this life. And, you know, it's, I have a personality and I have other things, but my soul will continue on. It will continue on past all that. And when you think of it from that perspective, and you think of it as, well, you know, I'm not my personality. I am a soul being. And you think of it on that level, everything around you and life as a whole really becomes very playful,
yeah,
and becomes kind of funny. And you kind of think, and I actually saw a Jim Carrey video the other day, and he was talking about this. He said the exact thing. He said life becomes very playful and joyful, and it becomes very almost irrelevant. You know, to think of it in that way. And that provides me with a lot of
It takes the pressure off you.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off, because that's the way I see things. You know, it's just that, it's just like, well, you know, and people say life is short, but life is not really that short. It's probably, it's the longest thing that you'll know in this in this being to ever do. I don't, like, you know, I think that's funny, but it's I suppose it's a play on the fact that it does become a bit funny and joyful and you know, very like silly, really. And you think of it in a macro term of things, like, you know, and a year, 3 years, 5 years, it's not that long. It's not that long, you know, it's really not that long.
Yeah, when you do have that security of feeling that there's something more than yourself, it takes the seriousness out of life. And it takes the pressure off you. And it actually, it kind of gives you a nice sense of calm. That and security. And you can look at things very much objectively. Then, from, you know, that you're not in it. You're part of it, but you're not in there. You're separate. Which is you know, which is the way forward. You know, but a lot of people, I suppose, are not there, you know. And it's scary on that journey. Like, it's scary going on that journey, you know. It's not easy. And, you know, it's just, as you know, what you were saying about what Oprah says, there's no, you know, itinerary or map, you know, it's, there's no way, you tick all these boxes and then you get there, you know.
And that book, The Seed of the Soul, is good, but like, pre-warning that you probably need to read it very slowly. It's a tough read, but I think that if you kind of feel almost an inclination that you are feeling something stronger than your personality or, you know, your relationships or life itself, I think if you do want to, if you feel that inclination and you pick up that book, you'll probably take to it easier, you know, and you have the draw to and the awareness to kind of want to read deeper into that.
And don't get frustrated if you kind of do pick up the book and you don't grasp it, or you can't, you know, you're not in the right headspace. Then just put it down and come back again, you know, at another time. It's growth, you know. So it's different stages. You just mightn't be in the right headspace to take it in.
So do we have anything else to add? I think we could talk about self-awareness all day. Is there anything else that you want to add before we switch up the gears and answer some of these questions?
Oh, I think, you know, you talked about the imposter. Is that coming up in the questions? I just wanted to say something about that, but you're going to...
I think that's actually one of the first questions. So a lot of the questions were about self-doubt, imposter syndrome, feelings of self-sabotage, which I actually don't really know what self-sabotage means. I suppose I don't really know what that means. Self-sabotage.
Constantly, I suppose.
Shutting things down.
Running yourself down, yeah. Being critical of yourself.
Okay.
And, you know, just kind of baiting yourself with a stick, you know.
So one girl says, I keep doing the self-sabotage thing. I'd love to not do that. Then another girl says, how to fight imposter syndrome. And then, yeah, I think that's how to stop doubting yourself. I do it in every aspect of my life. So where that they're all connected, I feel like.
Yeah, well, the self-sabotage, you know, I would get her to ask herself, why is she doing it? You know, it's I suppose, a defense mechanism of how she's dealing with things that are going on in her life. And she wouldn't really need to filter it out and question why she's doing it.
Yeah.
And what is she gaining out of it, you know?
Yeah.
She needs to strip it bare, you know, and it's a way of being, it's a learned behavior. So she just needs to strip it back and say, well, why am I doing this to myself? What's Mary, what am I getting out of it?
Yeah.
What harm, you know, just to kind of explore that part of it for her.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure she doesn't feel nice after it.
Yeah. And is it kind of like almost a CBT way of thinking that you kind of break down the thought cycle of those thoughts creeping in, and you kind of almost do a thought diary that you would notice every thought that's coming in and where it's, and when it comes in and where it's coming from?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Strip it down, examine it, and write it down, because often when we write things down on paper, we look at them and we say, really, is that really what's going on in my head?
Yeah.
The head can be vicious, you know, the thoughts going around and around. That's the way we're wired, you know.
Yeah.
So writing things down and looking at them in front of you and saying, God, I'm really doing that to myself. That's not true.
Yeah.
True, you know, fact or fiction.
Yeah.
One page, fact, fiction.
Right. So you would literally break them down rationally and say which thoughts are fact and which thoughts are fiction.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
Somebody said how to deal with those sad feelings after a breakup, which I would almost say that is similar to those fact or fiction thoughts.
Well, first of all, sad. You're going to feel sad after a breakup anyway, you know, especially if you were in love with the person or you had a good, you know, relationship with them.
Yeah.
You're going to feel sad. So, I mean, it's acceptance, you know. Yeah, I feel sad and that's okay, but I'm not going to dwell in it. You know, I'm going to allow myself to feel sad, but I'm not going to spend the whole day feeling sad.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I feel sad? Yeah, I love this person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I cared about this person. I miss this person. I feel sad. It's just an emotion.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it.
And I suppose if somebody is feeling sad for too long, or the sadness turns into anxiety or self-sabotage, that it goes back to breaking down the thoughts and not letting them spin around your head too much. Why do we do that? Why do the thoughts just constantly, like, why does everybody have a predisposition to thoughts spinning around your head?
Well, the brain is wired to be negative anyway. So we need 5 positive thoughts to get rid of the negative thoughts.
Right.
So that's the way we're wired, and it takes a lot more energy to fight that.
Mm.
But people probably don't really know how to do it. You know, people think, you know, oh, I'm going to replace that thought with a positive thought.
Mm.
That's not how it is. It's acceptance of the thought. Oh, yeah, that's that thought that, you know, I'm ugly or I'm this or I'm that. And then move it on.
Yeah.
You know, do a mental frame of putting on the bonfire or doing it on a train or, you know, allowing that thought in. Looking at it. Don't try to push it out.
Yeah.
Look at it and say, yeah, oh, yeah, that's that thought again.
Yeah.
And get, you know, move it forward into the next carriage on the train, you know, visualization, the next, you know, throw it on the bonfire. It will come back again, but with practice over time, they get less and less, and the intensity of the thoughts gets less and less.
Yeah.
And that's how you break it down.
Okay. All right. One lady asked, which we touched on a little bit earlier, what advice would you give to parents of young children growing up in today's society? So I suppose I would assume that she's kind of relating to technology or, you know, the exposure to bullying and all that with technology. So I suppose we didn't have that growing up.
It's hard. It's very hard for kids growing up now with like it is the media and the access to it,
yeah,
and the comparison and the likes on Facebook and all that. It's really tough, and kids are measuring themselves up against that.
Yeah,
that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
and it's very sad. Sad. And actually, there's a great book. It's another book, Dr. Harry Barry, Self Acceptance. It's a great book that every parent should read of young children.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of throws the baby out of the bathwater in the sense that he's challenging, you know, the effects of social media on our, and it's an epidemic, really. It really is. He's done great research into it. It's fact, you know. So it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, it does really go back to the point that we had earlier about having the child not seeking validation from, you know, their sports games or, you know, their anything external. Because if they're seeking validation, extreme validation from external factors, like social media is one of those external factors.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, that's it. Somebody said they're taking medication and going to counselling, but it's not improving their overall mental health. Could be so many factors going wrong there.
Yeah, I suppose I don't know. I suppose I need a little bit more about this person, but I would say to people, if they're really in a bad place as well too, that it can be very helpful to go to the doctor, get some medication that gets them to a level where they can engage in counselling and get the most out of it. Some people need that. He or she is saying it's not improving their overall health. It takes time.
Yeah.
It took a long time for that person to be where they are now.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time to come out the other side.
Yeah.
So
it's not going to happen. Yeah. And I suppose that they have to really want to work on it as well.
Well, that's it. And, it's down to how much you engage in counselling as to how dictates how much you're going to get out of it. And to be honest and open
with
the therapist. I mean, you know, we can only deal with what's presented, you know. We're not mind readers, you know.
Yeah.
People think that we are. People think that we can read people's minds.
But you can't.
No.
Somebody did ask about an eating disorder. Will it be there forever? And I think this is more common than in Irish people than I suppose we can cater to. You know, I think with the different policies in Ireland, you have to be under a certain weight to be admitted to hospital, and they don't really do a lot of talking about eating disorders. Is an eating disorder genetic, or is something that is kind of curable?
Well, people do come in and come out the other side, and they do move on. You know, it's specialised area, and you need specific help in that area by trained people that are trained in eating disorders.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't recommend that you go to a therapist just unless you need to be specifically trained.
Yeah. Would that be the same for bereavement, like bereavement therapy?
No.
All right. And then I think the last question is a little bit of a lighter note, and I think it's a nice question. Somebody asked what the definition of happy is. Save the hardest one to last.
Yeah, well, that could take the longest answer because, you know.
Episode two.
Yeah, I think so. Because, like, again, it's what are you measuring? You know, how are you making that call? What are you judging yourself up to? What does happiness mean to her or to him? You know, what does happiness mean? I know what happiness means to me. You know? To be content. To be okay in myself. To know that I am enough. To know that I am loved.
Yeah.
That's what it means to me. So, you know, how do you know? What was the question again, did she say?
What's the definition of happy?
Yeah. So what does it mean to her?
Yeah.
what does it mean? It's individual.
Yeah. So happiness is case by case.
Yeah, case by case, yeah.
Well, I think that's everything.
Thank you.
Enjoy that.
Yeah, hopefully people get something out with some help and insight, I don't know.
I think so. I think so.